Welcome to the Wellbeing Room. I'm your host, Leah Cooper from the Centre of Key. In this podcast, you'll hear stories of my own wellbeing journey, and you'll also be meeting some special people along the way who'll be sharing their stories too. As you listen, I hope you get inspired to improve your own wellbeing and get more out of life. Welcome to the Wellbeing Room. In today's episode, I'm joined by Tamsin Young, who is a money coach. Tamsin works with women to empower them with their finances. She works on both the practical money management skills and the energetic mindset work so that women can feel comfortable with their numbers and confident in making decisions with their finances. And this is so that they can create a business that supports them and that fits into their lifestyle. I've met Tamsin through our mutual friend, George Cow, through his business coaching course. I made a connection with Tamsin and I thought it'd be great to have her on the Wellbeing Room today. So welcome, Tamsin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, nice. So I think we'll just dive straight in. And I'm just curious, I don't actually know you that well. So I'm just wondering, and the listeners and the viewers don't know you that well either. So maybe tell us a bit about yourself, how you've got into this field of finance and money and specifically helping women with that.
Well, I've been in the finance, accounting, tech side basically my whole life. Mm-hmm. I did an accounting degree after school, joined KPMG, an auditing firm, went through the ropes. That was back in South Africa. I never did my CA back in South Africa, but when I came over to Australia, I had to convert my degree, came here, and I was working for a guy who, at age 33, I was the oldest person in the office. And I thought, so my boss is younger than me. If he can do it, why can't I do what he's doing? So I went and did my CPA, got my public practice certificate, and worked for him for a while, moved around, and then I went into my own business in public practice, being a tax accountant. We were then home educating our kids, and in hindsight, it probably would have been better staying in my own business, but I thought it would be better to move and work for somebody else so that I could just have a job and could focus on my kids. And I did that. And so as I say, I've always worked with the numbers. And what I would see in that world is how disconnected people, not just women, but people are to their numbers. It's a thing that they did. You go once a year to the accountant and you're just finding out how much do you pay the tax man or how much money you're going to get back. And that's would be the main amount of interest that people would take in their finances. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted it. There's so much more to it. And that's a very reactive way of dealing with your money as well. That some people who we just had the tax deadline, and you know, some people leave their tax till the last minute. Mm-hmm. And that information is 12 months old. It doesn't tell you anything about how you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I really want people to be more proactive with their numbers, that by the time the year end comes, you actually know how much tax you're going to be paying, that you can be aware of it, you can have provided for it if need be, mm-hmm. and you can use your financial records as one of the tools to guide you with making decisions for your business. Mm. I don't believe that money is the be-all and end-all as to why we're in business. Obviously, we want to make money, we want to make a profit because we want a roof over our head, we want food in our tummy, we want to enjoy life, and we want to create a lifestyle that we love. But it's not the be-all and end-all. I'm not a believer in I've got to make six figures, I've got to make $1 million and all that. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not going to say to people, oh, no, you mustn't do that. Mm. It's a goal, but it's not the only end goal. Mm. And I don't want people to be only driven by their numbers as to what they do and how they do it. Mm. I want them to be able to look at their finances in a more holistic way of how can it support me have the lifestyle that I want.
That's a really good point. It is, I think what you share about, you know, the six figures and, you know, people striving to get a number or just having no idea whatsoever, they just wait until the last minute to get their tax in. I've had my own journey as well on this, and I'm actually just in this process quite strongly just thinking more about money and what how I've treated money in the past, because I think we all have this sort of relationship with money, whether that's good or bad or somewhere in between.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's interesting. You've obviously had a passion for finance and money since you were quite young, you've studied this, you've worked in this accounting field. Was there something that drew you to that specifically to begin with?
Do you want the
Yes. I'm sure you're an honest person.
Okay, so this goes back to when I was at school. And I was good at accounting. I did bookkeeping at school, but I mean, bookkeeping, what you learn in bookkeeping is like minuscule. You cover it in about 3 months and when you do your degree. But when I was at school, we had very limited choices of subjects that we could do. And when you got to what would be the equivalent of year nine here, we had to choose the subjects that we wanted to do for year 12. And as I say, there weren't, I think out of the six subjects we did, I think four of them were compulsory at our school. So, there wasn't, when they say choice, there was limited. And of course, this timing of the classes and all that. So, my sister, who's older than me, when she, we went to a different school, but she said, oh, she wanted to do French and accounting. And she said, oh, that's like the easiest. So I thought, oh, easiest, that sounds like a good combination. So that's how I chose my subject at school, because I thought it's the easiest. That's what I'm going to do. But as I say, it turned out that I was good at bookkeeping, and it just flowed into doing an accounting degree, and everything just flowed from there. And the funny thing is that just because I'm good with numbers and I work in the money industry doesn't mean that I am perfect and excellent with my money, and that I haven't made mistakes with my money, and that I don't have the same mindset issues that other people have. We don't, being an accountant doesn't miraculously absolve you from experiencing the problems that people have. And it's probably been in about the last 10 years that I've really connected with my intuition. It's something that I've always been interested in alternative type therapies, and I've studied a lot of them, but I've always thought that life was either or. So you're either a linear logical or you're a creative, and I couldn't mix the two. And when I was doing some studying in intuition, I discovered, wow, I actually am intuitive, like we all are. Again, it's not a special gift that's been bestowed upon me and nobody else can have it. And that's when I started bringing that into the work that I do and combine it. But they both go together. It's you don't just work on mindset and the practical will just magically sort itself out. And you can't just do the practical side and expect the mindset side to sort itself out. They really are a combination of using your intuition as part of your business and making decisions, having the right mindset, looking at the energetics of your business, of your money, of your lifestyle, all those things. I'm very much into the holistic way of being. And that's where I say everything isn't money driven. It's one of the factors in your business. So even, how do you earn your money? Does that bring you joy? Because so what if you're earning $1 million if you're as miserable as hell, or you don't get to see your family? So, and I'm not saying you have to trade one off for the other either, that you can't make $1 million. You either have to make $1 million or see your family and have a good family life. It's, there isn't anything like that. But yeah, it's all about what you want in life and what you need. Who are we proving it to that we can make $1 million? I know you can do a lot with money and you can make a big difference in the world and you can help a lot of people with it, but we don't have to have that, We all have different skills and what we bring to the world and how we can help the world. And it doesn't always have to be money based. But
Nice.
I do believe it is important for us to be financially independent, that we can be responsible for our own money. And that is really what I want to bring. And that's why I focus on women, because a lot of women become single parents. They don't necessarily have the skills, they don't have the knowledge. And I want to change that, because otherwise they make decisions that aren't necessarily the best for them and their family, because they want security and things like that. And they end up getting into situations that aren't good for them, but they don't have any other choice at that stage because they don't have the education, and they don't have the right mindset or anything like that. So that's a very strong thing for me to educate people.
Yeah, I guess there's a whole piece around self-reliance as well, like being able to rely on your ability to earn an income, to support your family, not having to rely on a partner who maybe isn't a good partner for you or something
Absolutely.
like that. So yeah, or the government, for instance, like getting on welfare if that's something you don't want to do, so yeah.
And again, it's great. I think Australia is wonderful in that it has those opportunities that you don't have to worry about, oh, I'm going to be out on the street. But we do have the resources, and women are incredibly powerful and are incredibly capable people. And there's no reason why they can't financially support themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a bit about perhaps some of the struggles that you see women facing and whether they're more practical or more energetic mindset issues. Maybe you can give us a few examples.
I it's both. Some people might be more to the one side than the other. A lot of women don't believe they have the skills to do the practical side. Oh, I can't worry myself about that. Or my father, my husband, somebody else is always, it's always somebody else's job, particularly the creatives. They're probably like me. I was on one side going, oh, I can't be a creative or an intuitive. And the creatives go, I can't be practical with money. I don't have those skills. I'm no good at maths. And maths has got nothing to do with it. And yes, it's numbers. But your numbers tell you a story, and it's up to you to learn how to interpret that story and understand what the numbers mean. On their own, they mean nothing. So it's learning to read another language. And that's really where most people from the practical side of things fail, that they don't, that they just go, oh, it's a whole lot of numbers, I don't know what to do. And it's just educating them how to do it, because you don't have to do the processing. You can hire a bookkeeper who knows what they're doing and how to operate it. But hiring a bookkeeper, having an accountant, doesn't absolve you of being responsible for your finances. So that's the one side, on the practical side, of making feel comfortable with their money and their numbers, that they don't feel embarrassed. They don't go, well, this is a silly question, or they don't ask the question because they think it's silly. You go, I don't know what it is. Please tell me. Please explain it to me. And I don't care if somebody asks me five times and I have to explain the same thing over and over again. I'd rather they did that than go off and go, I don't know what she's talking about, I'll just go and do whatever I think, because it just ends up a disaster at the end. And from a mindset point of view, a lot of people, particularly if they've been in the corporate world, they associate making good money with having to work long hours. And they kind of put a ceiling on themselves to not make a lot of money because of the associations of what they're going to have to sacrifice to be able to earn that money. And there's also a interesting little shift that the difference between working for somebody else, like say you're in sales and you're going out and you're selling a product. So if I go along and I take this pen and I tell you about how wonderful the pen is, and you go, I'm really not interested in pink pens. And you go, okay, there's nothing personal. I haven't made this pink pen. It's just somebody else's product. I'm just telling you about it. And you like it, you don't like it. That's fine. I go on to the next person. But when it's a service that I'm providing and it's me, suddenly it becomes very personal. And people go, oh, that person didn't like me. Oh, what I do is no good. So we doubt our ability in the work that we do. We don't want to charge for the work that we do, particularly women who are in the healing industry. There's a lot of belief that, well, you're healing, you should just do it for free. It's a gift that you've got. But being able to be an accountant is a gift as well. And we charge, so why shouldn't somebody in the healing space be able to charge for the work that they do? Musicians, why is there such a resistance to musicians, artists in any way, of not being able to charge or being looked down for charging? So a lot of it is perceptions and societal conditioning as well, which is all that mindset stuff, that we can believe that what we have to offer is of worth and that we can provide it. And yes, people aren't going to like your work. That's fine. Not everybody likes what you do, and that's okay. There's a saying about you can be the sweetest, juiciest peach in the box, and somebody's not going to like peaches, so it doesn't matter. You just got to find the people who who love the peaches and somebody will love you. So it's a lot of it is our belief in ourselves of what we can and can't do and how we can charge for it on the energetic side.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting because I recently, earlier this year, decided to put my prices up for my yoga classes, and I had a real struggle of, I was going from $15 that I was charging for a class, and I looked around, where what other people were charging, and it's like, oh, should I be charging the same amount? In the city, they're charging this much more. I'm sort of living in a more rural community, so I should probably not charge as much. And I was debating with myself over taking my price up to $17 or $18, like nothing, like insignificant amount really. And oh, it was like a real struggle, and I ended up putting the price up to 18, and I felt good about it in the end, but probably could have even gone a little higher, but I guess didn't want to make the jump too big, from 15 up to 20 or something. So yeah, it is the real mindset about, what am I worth, and I'm a very experienced teacher. I've been doing this for quite a while, and I practice, so yeah, just thinking about what you're worth. And now that I'm also working more sort of more freelance now on other projects as well, I'm, setting my hourly rate and yeah, like thinking, well, what is my time worth and my experience. So yeah, when you're self-employed or you're doing your own business, you really got to work through these issues, don't you?
Absolutely. And pricing is always a big thing. And we talk about worth and we talk about value. Sometimes you can't even actually charge your worth or your value, not because you're not worth that, but because it just kind of it's almost like priceless what you can offer. So it's finding a price that you feel good with, like you found with your thing. $17, $18, $20, a dollar here, a dollar there, whatever. It's not big in this whole scheme of things, but it also has to be something that you feel comfortable with and not from the fear of what will people think, but that, yeah, that feels good. I feel comfortable for the amount of time that I'm providing these people with my expertise, all those things. Yep, that feels good for me. That feels right. It feels like a good exchange for what I'm offering. Yes, I could earn more if I was doing it in another country, in another city, whatever it was. And there's no right or wrong. There's no that was often talk about price, crowdsourcing your price, asking people how much would you pay. You can't do that because some people might have no experience in yoga and go, spend all that money on having a yoga class. What do you do? Just lie there and relax and say, you got to pay that much money for it. Whereas somebody who really enjoys it will go, wow, absolutely, I'd quite happily pay that. So it comes back to, and this is where I work with the intuition as well of what feels good for you and at this time. And nothing is set in concrete. We can always change things.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's so true. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's really great. And there's so many things I want to ask you, but I don't want to take up too much more time. So I guess, are there any specific tools or, strategies that you use with people to help them through this process?
The biggest one is, as I've mentioned, is intuition and allowing people to tap into their intuition. I don't want to be people's guru. I'm not coming as the I am your savior and I will give you all the answers that we have. It really is a relationship and a communication between us of working through things. And I will tap into my intuition. I will give my feedback and they will give their feedback of what they get when they tap into, I think what I do is I work in circles. So the creator circle. So it's having a vision for your life and where you want to be. And then you step into a creator circle of what is it like in that space. And then we step into a circle of current reality. And this is where I currently am. And what is the next step that I need to take to move from this current reality towards my vision? And it's to say, it's just the process of sitting, being in there, getting into that vibration of, right, this is what I'm working towards. Okay, this is where I am. Not good, bad. There's no judgment about it because We are conditioned and we have a story as to how life should be, which is all our mindset problems that we have and whatever. I do tapping if that is something. I don't believe that it is some magical wand that makes everything just disappear, but it certainly helps the body regulate things. It helps act as a pattern interrupter that you can release that emotional attachment to those emotions. You can't change your past, you can't change your experiences. What happened happened, but what we can do is not be emotionally attached to that and go, oh, when I was five, this experience happened. You can go, oh, yeah, when I was five, that experience happened, but I'm not allowing that to stop me from moving forward because that's all it does is it just you go, I can't do it because of this experience. We can logically we can talk about it and go, well, of course you can do it, but all those things come into play and they just go crazy when you start taking action. So it's just working with those things. But I find circle work is really powerful because you step into the vision of where you want to be. And obviously that feeling and that energy can be what can move you forward.
I think that is really powerful. It's probably something I should be doing myself. I have kind of been dabbling a little bit in that. But yeah, I love that idea of, the future self, like what do you want your life to be like? And then where are we now? And yeah, working out what those steps are to get from here to there, and beyond that even, I
And
think
the most
that's
important part is then taking the action and actually taking those steps because it can all be very well getting the next step, but if you don't take the step, then you kind of stay stuck.
And I guess so you work with people to sort of help them through that process. Yeah, excellent. Oh, fascinating. I love it. Absolutely love it. So we'll start to wrap things up for this episode, but I'm just curious, what's one key thing that has helped you to improve wellness and get more out of life? Because we are in the well-being room, and I do like to ask my guests, and it doesn't have to be anything about what we've already talked about. It could be something completely unrelated, but yeah, something that's helped you to improve wellness and get more out of life.
For me, probably one of my key words is spaciousness and the yin and yang, which I also tie in with my money, the practical and energetic side of things. I like being with people, I like doing things, but I'm also having that time for myself, by myself, having that time to recharge is really important. I'm not a go, 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 go person 24/7. And so finding and really honoring that time, and I often fall off the bandwagon with it, but it's probably the most important thing for me just to have that chill out time. And that could be as simple as going sitting in a bath for half an hour, reading a book out on the couch outside. It's just not having all that noise around me. It's having time to myself. It's having time to breathe, having time to think and not feel rushed. I don't like being rushed, so being able to be in a space that just feels calm and centered and that. And there's a lot of other things that I do as well that support me, but that I find is really my key thing. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to go and sit on the mountain. I don't have to meditate. It doesn't have to be anything like that. It could be literally sitting outside for 5 minutes with a cuppa or something and just enjoying being on my veranda and, just having that space.
Yeah, beautiful. No, that's wonderful. It's appreciating those moments of spaciousness that you say. I love that. I love that word too. It's such a nice, juicy word. Awesome. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, viewers, before we wrap things up today?
Oh, just learn to have a loving relationship with your money. It doesn't have to be scary. And if it is that if it does feel scary, just find a way to change it around and think of money as a friend and how would you treat a friend? And go take the next step from there.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think for me, especially on my money journey, just learning that money is a friend, it's there to help you, just there to serve you. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind. Lovely. Thank you so much, Tamsin, for joining us in the well-being room today. It's been a real pleasure to have you here. And yeah, I look forward to seeing you around. And yeah, all the best.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Wellbeing Room. I hope you've enjoyed listening to my conversation with Tamsin, and maybe you're interested in learning more about how to become friends with your finances. If you'd like to get in touch with Tamsin, please check out the show notes for a link to her Facebook page, and please get in touch with her. If you've enjoyed this episode and you think one of your friends, family, or colleagues would be interested in hearing it, please feel free to share it with them. Also, you can like our podcast on Spotify or leave a review in Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, stay well.